Thank you, Chairman Scott, Rick, Governor Anderson, Senator Mondale, Congressman Oberstar, and other members of our congressional delegation, delegates to our Democratic Farm Labor Convention, and our good friends that are here in the galleries that have come for such a very important purpose from up in Silver Bay and the North Shore communities. May I say that you're at the right place to talk about the right thing to the right people, and may I also say that you'll find out that your friends haven't forgotten you, nor will we forget you. Now, some of these delegates have had so much of Hubert Humphrey that they say, oh no, not again. I walked in here yesterday afternoon and was privileged to spend a few minutes with you at this roster. Last night, I gave you the whole load, those of you that were at the dinner. We had a great dinner, marvelous, sponsored by the 8th District, a success in every way. This morning, we had a breakfast meeting for some of our county officers to lay out some of our plans for the coming election. Yesterday morning, you heard from our distinguished Senator Walter Mondale, who gave you a stirring address, a marvelous message. I've been telling Fritz that I know that envy and jealousy are cardinal sins, but I'm burdened with them. Every time I've turned on the television, there is Mondale just giving the Nixon Ford administration you know what. I've never seen him so worked up. I began to think that he was running for president again. Not a bad idea either, Fritz. Last night, we had a marvelous time. And now we're here today for serious business in our convention. And let me say what a special pleasure it is for Muriel and I to have a chance to see you, to be with you. I know you must think I'm a terrible sentimentalist, but the DFL party is like an extension of our family. Yes, we, even the fights, you know, it's all a part of our fellowship in the work of politics. We've done a lot of things together. We've had some great victories, we've had some disappointments, we've had some joys and moments of happiness and some moments of sadness and sorrow. But we have grown together, we've been together, and we're going to continue to work together to crown our efforts with a great victory in 1976. We have proven, have we not, that by work and trust and cooperation, we can bring to fruition our hopes. We can have victory at the polls and then go on to provide solid accomplishment in the halls of government. Everyone in this delegation, everyone in this convention can go back to their respective constituencies and be proud of the record of performance of the Democratic Farmer Labor Administration in the state capitol. Our governor, our lieutenant governor, our other constitutional officers, our attorney general, our Minnesota DFL majorities in the state legislature. It is truly a remarkable record of progress for the people of Minnesota. And we ought to be able to go back and carry this message in a convincing manner and to answer Republican complaints and charges by the record of solid performance and not merely rhetoric. And remind these good friends of ours in the opposition party that for years they controlled this state. And for years they gave no relief to the elderly. For years they did little or nothing educational benefits. And yet, as we have said from this platform and others, in these past few years, despite the increased costs of government, despite the demands upon our state government, we've had fiscal responsibility at the state capitol. There's a budget down there and a budget surplus, and yet great things have been done in the fields of health, of education, of conservation for our family farmers, for the housing of our people, for a host of things that mean better living and better living conditions for the citizens of this state. No state can proclaim with more sincerity and honesty a record as good as the state of Minnesota under the leadership of Wendell Anderson and the DFL legislature. Now, Lord, we've been together a long time, and the test is one of trust and faith and performance. There are people here today that are our best friends in these galleries. They've come a long ways. They've lived under a cloud of uncertainty. Their jobs have been threatened. They've never known from one year to the next what was going to happen to their communities. That is an incredible burden. It is a torturous experience. And let me say to those that don't have to live under that, it's easy for us in other parts of the state to say, oh, well, do this, do that. But these are people with their families. These are people that need jobs. These are working people. These are fellow citizens. And most of these people have supported those of us that are on this platform. In fact, we wouldn't be elected. We wouldn't be where we are were it not for people like I see in these galleries that have given us a full measure of their devotion. And I want this message to go from this platform and this hall. The Democratic Farmer Labor Leadership, your governor, your senior Senator Fritz Mondale, your junior Senator Hubert Humphrey, your Congressman Jim Oberstar, and those of us that are in this state administration, we are not going to let you down. We haven't let you down in the past. We'll not let you down in the future. We will find an answer to this critical problem up there on the shores of Lake Superior. And we'll find one that will preserve your jobs, preserve your community, and still preserve for the future a clean environment. no results to come from that. We want the company, we want the jobs, we want the production, and we want a solution, and we will find it. We have a legislature, we have a Congress, and we have the labor movement, and we will work together until we find the answer for your jobs and your communities. Now, dear friends, let me talk to you about what could be other dash holes, because there's nothing that is more serious and more damaging to anybody than the fear of the lack of a job, the loss of a home, or the abandonment of a community. This party must be dedicated to families, to homes, to communities. We need, in every office in this land, starting at the presidency, a one who understands the hopes and the fears of every family in America, their problems, their concerns, their wishes. That's why I'm in politics. That's why I'm here. Because I know from personal experience some of the tragedies of life, some of the joys of life, what it is to look for a job, what it is to find one. And now I know how fortunate I am that I am truly one of the most fortunate people in the world, with a good family, a lovely wife, a good job, good income. I owe much to many, and I shall not forget that responsibility. And one of the reasons that I have been so disturbed and distressed with the Republican administration down in Washington, D.C., is because that administration does not seem to understand the concerns and the worries that millions of our people have. For 20 months, that administration looked with callous indifference upon the rising tide of unemployment. For better than 2 years, 3 years, they saw the specter of inflation eating up people's income, until workers found that after all of the social gains of the past 12 years, they found their income back at 1965 levels. 7 years of Republican Nixon Ford administration liquidated 11 years of gains on the economic front. And I have traveled this country. I have been in the cities. I've been out in the rural areas, and I can tell you that possibly as much or more as any other member of Congress, I have met with thousands of people who cry out for just one thing, a chance, an opportunity. They don't want welfare. They want work. They don't want unemployment compensation. They want a job. They want a government that understands their needs. They're not asking a government to take care of them. They're merely asking a government to take care of the management of this economy so that we as individual citizens can take care of ourselves. And that's a legitimate request. The era of dash hopes is what we've been living through. We've seen the great office of the presidency demeaned and tarnished, literally breaking the spirit of America. The Oval Office, the very center of what should be the political and moral authority of this nation, had been corrupted. Is it any wonder that people are dispirited? And any wonder that they are disillusioned? They have witnessed an economy grind down until there were over 10 million people in this country willing to work, able to work, who had been at work with no job. They saw inflation like a hidden tax steal from their purses and their bank accounts millions and billions of dollars. And they saw a government that preached but one philosophy, the forces of the marketplace. The people were supposed to be the victims of some kind of a natural law of economics that would rob the people of their production, of their income, and of their work. Is it any wonder that there is disillusionment? Millions of young people in our cities are today the victims of economic mismanagement, so that they have become involved in crime, living in the shadow economy. The rate of crime in America is related almost identically to the rate of economic distress, particularly as it relates to the young. Let me tell you that the Joint Economic Committee commissioned a study at Johns Hopkins University. And that study shows that as the rate of unemployment rose, as people slipped out of what we might call low or moderate income into poverty, that the rate of juvenile crime and youth crime skyrocketed. Until today, 80% of all the crime committed in the United States is committed by young people. 90% of all crime is committed by youngsters between the ages of 15 and 25. And the biggest public works project in America today is the building of jails. Ladies and gentlemen, that is an unhappy set of circumstances, a threatening set of conditions, an era of dashed hopes. The abuse of power, the use of the intelligence agencies of this government, agencies designed to protect our security from foreign foes, agencies that were designed to protect us from organized crime. Those agencies, as Senator Mondale can tell you, have been used on the American people. They've been used for sinister political purposes. The abuse of power. Is it any wonder that people are cynical, concerned, and disillusioned? The era of dashed hopes. But my good friends, like every other period in our national history, we have learned from the arduous experience of what has happened. We have learned the hard way. And the elected representatives of the American people, with all of our inadequacies, have today done things that are giving some balance back to government and some perspective and respect for human rights. The War Powers Act, to put limits upon the power of any president to commit American forces into combat without the direct approval and consent of Congress. A very important piece of legislation. The Oversight Committee, as a result of Senator Mondale's and Senator Church's activities in the United States Senate to monitor and to supervise every action of the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI, so that never again shall it be abusive of its power on the American people. Legislation passed that requires every committee of the Congress of the United States to be open, so that the people can see what's going on. And the only time those doors can be closed is when there is a roll call vote of the members of the committee, so that you can know who voted to shut you out. I tell you that the sunshine law of openness will do a lot to remove the bacteria of corruption. And there is more. The Budget Control Act passed by the Congress, so that we, the elected representatives of the people, will have something to say about the priorities. That we'll have something to say about for what purpose will our money be expended. To put some control upon spending and some responsibility for the selection of goals and priorities. And furthermore, we witnessed presidents that withheld from the public the funds that had been appropriated as a result of the express will of the elected representatives of the American people. Funds for disaster relief, funds for school lunches, funds for highways, funds for airports, funds for our farmers that needed credit, funds for nutrition programs for women, infants, and children. A president who thought he knew more than anybody else. And even though the elected representatives of the people said, this is our policy, we want money for airports, for roads, we want money for farm credit, we want help for child care, we want assistance for school lunches, we had an imperial president who thought he was emperor rather than the elected representative of the American people. And we have put an end to it. The Congress of the United States will no longer tolerate such abuse of power. And we have now developed a sharing of responsibility in the enunciation and the statement of our foreign policy objectives. And one of the great struggles that's going on right now is whether or not America will become the arms merchant of the world, or whether or not America will have policies that will see to it that military equipment will be used for purposes of national security and not for purposes of trade and commerce and balance of payments. We are doing something. So as Democrats, we are determined to bring this era of dashed hopes, of cynicism and disenchantment and confusion to an end. It will not be easy, nor has it been. But we can do it. My dear friends, this nation has survived civil war, the incredible corruption of that period following that war. This country has survived the rape of its resources in the days of the robber barons. This country has survived two world wars, Korea and Vietnam. It has survived a Great Depression that brought this nation almost to its knees. And it has survived Richard Nixon and Watergate, and it'll survive if we have the will to make it survive. But out of all of it, we have learned. Out of all of it, great conservation measures came in the early 1900s. Great reform came after the Depression, so that people's bank accounts were protected, the stock market was kept from being a place of thievery. People's needs were at least recognized. We always learn the hard way. The child learns that the stove is hot, not by his mother's admonition, but having put his hand or her hand on the hot stove. And we have had the unfortunate experience of having our hand on the hot stoves of corruption and abuse of power and scandal. And we have learned, and we will continue to. Remember, government and democracy is a human instrument. People are not gods or saints. They are fallible, not infallible. They have weaknesses as well as strengths. And representative government represents it all. But remember what Winston Churchill said to us of democracy. He said, democracy is the worst possible form of government, except all others that have been tried from time to time, which is only a way of recognizing that there is no perfection in human instruments. Perfection is for divine providence. We seek to be more perfect. That's what the Constitution says. A more perfect union. We commit ourselves to seek and establish justice. We make pledges and promises. I'm sure that, and I hope at least, at some time in this convention, we took the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That is not a statement of fact. It is a statement of hope. It is a promise to be fulfilled. It is a challenge to inspire us. And as long as we keep the promise before us, as long as the challenge is there, we will reach out to achieve it. I want an America, dear friends, that never gives up. I want an America that seeks to do better. I want us to build a more perfect union. I want us to stretch and not to sit. I want us to be a nation that looks to the future and not to the past. So let me help you today and look to the future. Yes, with inspiration from the past, because as a great philosopher once said, those who do not learn their history shall be condemned to relive it. I don't want to have to see any American relive the tragic days of war and depression. So we need to know our heritage and our history. We need to draw inspiration from the great immortals. We need to be encouraged by the experiences of those that have gone before. And we need to learn from the mistakes that have been made. I have tried in my public life to be constantly conscious of what is the purpose of government. And the purpose is to serve, to do justice, to promote the general welfare, to provide for the common defense, and to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. Those are the legitimate purposes of government. And the preamble to the American Constitution, by its very language, requires a government of purpose and action, because it says, we the people, popular sovereignty, in order to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, to assure domestic tranquility, to provide for the common defense, to promote the general welfare, to secure the blessings of liberty, to hereby establish and ordain this Constitution. Listen to the words. Form, establish, assure, provide, promote, secure. All of those words are words of action, not of apathy and indifference, not benign neglect, but willful purpose. And government to serve the American people must be an active government. It must be a strong government. But above all, it must be a government that understands that it is the servant of the people and not the master of the people. So during my days as your senator, I have fought for civil rights. I have fought for not only the protection of the minorities, but for their emancipation, to bring into this society in full bloom the richness of talent that is to be found amongst the American black, the Chicano, the American Indian, the Puerto Rican, minorities of any group, and to release the tremendous potential of talent and energy that is to be found in the American women, so that we can put America where it belongs. I dared to fight for Medicare when it was called socialism. I stood by a president and helped pass, as did Senator Mondale, the Voting Rights Act. that opened up the franchise to people who had been denied their democratic rights. I was the original author of Food for Peace, to share the abundance of the American fields and our farms to the hungry people of the world. The Food for Peace program has saved millions of lives, and I am proud to have had even a little share in saving one life. I helped propose with John Kennedy the Peace Corps that put American youth, yes, and others, out to help people in other parts of the world as an expression of American humanity. I fought for the nuclear test ban treaty to curb the terrible power and the unbelievable tragedy of nuclear war. I have helped negotiate the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Pact. I was the author of the U.S. Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. These, friends, are acts of peace, because peace is the ultimate goal of civilized men and women. I authored, along with our distinguished colleague, Senator Mondale, the Rural Development Act, designed to help our rural communities. And when there is a Democratic president in the White House, the Rural Development Act will come alive. Today, they keep it buried. We have fought for the school lunch program, the food stamp program. All of these are programs for people. And it is these very programs that are under attack today. And I ask you to stand up and defend those things that mean so much to our country. When we hear the complaints about big government, what are they talking about? They're talking about the things that we're doing to help people. Those who complain about big government are not complaining about the Defense Department. They're not complaining about a $112 billion defense budget. They're not complaining about new weapon systems. They're complaining about the fact that somebody is getting some food stamps. Somebody is ripping off, as they say. The Secretary of the Treasury, mind you, stuck his nose into this issue. Got worried that somebody was getting a food stamp that they ought not to get. And some of them were. But that same Secretary of the Treasury never once lifted his voice about usurious interest rates that robbed the American people and that brought this economy to a terrible recession. Yes, I'm proud to have played some little role in congressional enactment of important legislation that has provided a safety net of economic and social programs which have kept this country from experiencing a complete repetition of the Great Depression in the last 7 years of Republican rule. Have you ever imagined for a few moments what would have happened in 1974 and 75 without Social Security, without unemployment compensation, without welfare, without food stamps, without the special supplemental social assistance? Have you ever stopped to think what would have happened to America under Republican rule these last 6 or 7 years had it not have been for the great Democratic programs that provided for the care of our people? But there's a new world before us. It's very different. A whole new set of circumstances, new power relationships in the world, new nations aspiring to their place in the sun, new ideologies that challenge us, new technology that amazes us, new scientific developments that overwhelm us. When you live a year now, my fellow Americans, you live a decade under the terms of your parents. 1 year in the 1970s is equal to 10 years in the 1940s and 50s. The rapidity of change, like mighty tidal waves flowing over us, breaking up homes and families, changing business patterns, evolving new countries, new ideologies. Is it any wonder that we are somewhat distraught? We are overwhelmed with facts, with figures, with drama, with tragedy, with news. All you need to do is turn on your radio. And today, there are people in this audience that in their youth would have never known what was happening in Asia or Africa. You wouldn't have hardly known how to identify it. But today, the news from Angola, or the news from Mozambique, or the news from Malaysia or India, or the news from Algeria or Jordan or Syria or Lebanon, that news flows in on us in a constant stream of tragedy, in a constant stream of agony, and we're overwhelmed. And then we have our own concerns at home, the concerns that these dear people have here that have come to see us today, when their lives are on the line, when their jobs are at stake, when their communities are being threatened of being rubbed out, when a company that provides jobs is in trouble. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a difficult time in which to live, a time fraught with danger and yet filled with opportunity. Like Charles Dickens said in the Tales of the Two Cities, it is the best of times and it is the worst of times. It's just a question of what we do with the time that we have. Time is neutral. It is only how we use time that will count. So the challenge of our party is bigger than just winning an election. It is to bring the American people, to the American people, a government of the people, and by the people, and for the people, and a government that understands, a government that cares, a government that smiles, a government with tears, a government with hopes, and a government with courage. And ladies and gentlemen, if we stand together, so help me God, we will win that election, and we will bring that kind of government back to America. People are asking from our representatives that are elected is a government that works, one that is competent, and one that is fair. And it's our job to see that that happens. This party must resolve to present the American people not with merely the litany of our yesterdays, but a program that will bring us a whole new day, a brand new era, washing away, cleansing from our conscience and our mind the broken promises of the yesterdays, the era of dashed hopes, and bring us once again what we spoke of only a few years back, the period of high hopes for a great and energetic people. A new day for America is long overdue, and the keystone to that, to the fulfillment of that hope, must be integrity of government. A government that respects the rights of its people, that is accountable to the people, that is open to the people. A presidency that is not imperial, but a presidency that is a citizen presidency. A Congress that understands that it's there to serve and not to order. Remember, in America, leadership is not command. Leadership is persuasion. And that's the kind of president and government that this country has got to have. The heart of America, the heart of our country must be revived through the adoption of a program, and it's a bold program. It challenges the past. But the time is at hand to proclaim a new right, the right to useful work, the right to full employment, the right to a decent job and a fair wage for every single person that is willing to work and wants to work and wants to contribute to this country. That is going to be the central issue of this contest that's coming up. The battle in America in 76 is a battle over economic and social philosophy. And we should be ready to join the contest. And if you're not convinced, then get out of the way and let those of us who are convinced do the fighting. Because there is a job to be done in this country. I am unwilling to accept as inevitable that the price of having prosperity for the few is to have aggravated and intensified misery for the many. I refuse to accept that as a proposition of American politics. Let me say to our farm friends, we know that the family farmer is the backbone of this economy, and don't this convention ever forget it. You live in Minnesota, and let me tell you, friends, I know how big the automobile companies are and the steel companies and the electronic companies, but they all fade into insignificance as if they're a popcorn stand when it comes to agriculture. American agriculture is America's business. A small percentage of the American citizenry on our farms is the difference between bankruptcy and solvency in this country. It is the margin of difference between our system and the totalitarian system. Yes, the Russians can produce missiles bigger than ours, but they can't make a family farm work because they don't have one. Of course, they have some other problems. Their weather is bad. Most of their productive land is north of the latitude of Minneapolis and about the latitude of Winnipeg. So, in a very real sense, their hopes of being self-sufficient in food has been governed by an act of nature. And only God Almighty can change that, and the Russians have repudiated him, so there's no chance. Looking to the future, have the courage to know that the American people need and will have a national health care program, preventive care, sickness care, and at costs that the American people can afford with universal health insurance for every single person in this land. And in foreign policy, let us never again mistake power for knowledge. Dear friends, we were brought up to believe that knowledge was power. But once that we became a mighty military power, we began to assume that power was knowledge. The mistakes that have been made were mistakes because of the wrong assumptions. We must never let that happen again. Now, this national action agenda is ours. And it's big, and it's mighty, and it's challenging, and it's difficult. If you want to belong to a political party that lets you be lazy and apathetic, you can join what they call the IR. They call themselves Independent Republicans, which, by the way, is a violation of truth in labeling. There are no such animals. But ours is a party for people of courage, of daring, and of adventure. If you want to be a pioneer, if you want to take a chance, if you want to put your life on the line, if you want to be bold, be with us. But if you want to get in a rocking chair, if you want to be on the Geritol diet, get with them. We're the party, may I say, of bread and butter, milk and beefsteak with a hungry vitamin at it. So here we go. Here's what we've got to do. We have to restore the vitality of our cities. Then somebody says, you can't do that. Costs too much. Listen, ladies and gentlemen. The United States government, in cooperation with the nations of Western Europe after World War II, through the Marshall Plan, with our money, with their planning, with their willingness to cooperate, and our willingness to assist, rebuilt every bomb-torn and bomb-destroyed city in Europe. Now listen, if we can rebuild Berlin, if we can help rebuild London, if we can help rebuild Stuttgart and Cologne, you're going to tell me that we can't clean up New York and St. Louis and Cleveland or whatever other city? The difference is that we rebuild European cities because there was a Harry Truman in the White House, and you won't even rebuild an igloo with Gerald Ford in the White House. Yes, we are a bold party. We dare to try. We'll dare to try to provide equity in our taxing policies, and that's being done right now. And the man that's here, Senator Walter Mondale, is doing more to put justice and fairness in the tax code of the United States than any man in the Congress of the United States. And that takes guts. It takes guts and brains. And Fritz has got a load of both. We have to have a governmental policy that knows that we need to protect our environment and our natural resources, but enough sense to know that you can have economic growth and development and environmental protection at the same time if you got enough brains to walk in out of the rain. As a matter of fact, great prospects for new industry as we seek to clean up our rivers and lakes, as we seek to clean up our air. It's not a liability. It's going to be a whole new industry. We need to bring into the mainstream, as I said earlier, of this country, the talents of every person. America doesn't belong just to some Americans. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to be white or Protestant or Catholic or Jew. It just says we the people. And this party of ours must never walk away from its responsibilities to human rights, because human rights is America, and America is human rights. And Richard Nixon's worst crime was not Watergate. It was that he stopped the progress of bringing into the mainstream of American life the millions and millions of people who are crying out to have a chance to be a first-class American citizen. We'll change that. And we'll champion the cause of education. Thomas Jefferson said, you can't be both ignorant and free. We want to be free. And to be free, we have to have learning. And to have learning, we have to dare to believe that every man, woman, and child, regardless of their circumstances, is entitled to all of the education that they can possibly absorb. And we'll see that that's done. That's what our governor has sought to do in this state. And we'll reform our welfare policies. And we'll see to it that those who need it will get it. And we'll see to it that those who don't need it will not get it, so that the American people can be sure that they're being treated fairly. And we'll enact, and we need to enact, a national food policy that looks down the road. Here we face the specter of drought. What if it happens? What if there's drought next year? Where are our reserves? My dear friends, in the book of Genesis, and it may very well be in the 42nd chapter, I can't remember, but somewhere there is the story of the reserves in those early days, the 7 long years and the 7 lean years. You don't have to have a new Democratic program. Just go back to the Old Testament, it's all there. And it just simply said that you ought to have enough sense that when you produce more than you need, to save some of it for the days that you produce less than you need, when you're going to need more than you can produce. That's all. And we need to have a vigorous energy policy. I, as yes, we need to do a lot of things. And right away I hear the voice say, well, there he goes again. Because I've heard it so many times. Promising too much. I'm not promising you anything. I'm telling you that's what we need to do. I didn't promise you it was going to happen. I said it needs to happen. I tell you that this is a minimum list of what is needed in this country. And I tell you that there are young people, people of middle age, senior citizens. There are the handicapped and the disabled. There are the men and the women that are anxious to get at it. They want to do something about it. They're tired of being put down. They're tired of being told, no, no. They're tired of 99 vetoes. They're tired of an administration that says, don't be, don't dream, don't dare. Ladies and gentlemen, a nation without dreams will never have any realities. A nation without vision shall perish, and a nation without hope is dead. I want democratic leadership to arouse in America a sense of its destiny. I tell you that everything that's worthwhile is a promise. The Bible itself is a promise. The hope of heaven is a promise. The hope of eternal life is a promise. Everything that's worthwhile is a promise. And I am fed up with these bookkeepers, these corporate executives that they bring in from time to time into Washington in the name of the Republican Party to tell us that we ought to run government like a business and at the same time have the worst deficits that this country's ever had and leave people in pain and suffering. Well, that's my sermon for the day. Now, I happen to know that what I've told you we can do. The difference between a great people and an ordinary people is doing the impossible. If you want to do only ordinary things, keep the Republicans in. It'll be dead, lackadaisical, uninteresting, but you'll survive. But if you want to live, if you want the joy of life, if you want the exhilaration that comes from challenge and competition, if you want to dare to try something, be a Democrat. And if you really want to make America what it ought to be, think of where we should be, not where we've been. Think of what we could be, not what we are. And I tell you, dear friends, that if we do that, there'll be a new day for America. There'll be an America reborn in the spirit of those God-given rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and reborn in the knowledge that to make life better, to help your brother and your sister, to lift the burden from the weak, to help the sick, to teach the illiterate, to heal those who are down and out, that this is the Lord's work and that it can be done through political action. I challenge this party to give up your haunches and let's go on out and win for a purpose, and that purpose is a new day for America.